Have you ever seen a haunted house? You know the kind I mean. That old dark house that's usually at the end of a dimly lit street. The owners haven't been seen for years, no one really knows why. The windows are broken and boarded, and the shutters hang loose on their hinges. The trees have grown wild, their branches brush against the side of the weathering house, making strange noises in the night. There's a high, vine-covered fence around the property. Is it there to keep somebody out? Or is it there to keep something inside? It's a house that people avoid walking past at night. Strange sounds come from within the walls, and it's said that eerie lights have been seen both in the attic windows and in the graveyard at the side of the house. Our podcast revolves around mysterious mansions like this. On a night not long ago, four gentlemen nerds were gathered in the Lobot Lounge to discuss haunted houses. Mickey Finn.
I am in the walls.
Aaron de Orive. And I am your host, your ghost host, and emotional touchstone, Joseph Fotinos. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge and our special presentation on haunted houses. Gentlemen, we're here gathered at the Lobot Lounge, having a few drinks, chatting about things that go bump in the night, specifically encased in houses,
yes.
Haunted houses, real and imagined.
This is an episode where we all have amazing haunted house stories.
Even me.
You know,
wow, oh, yeah.
And Mickey. Okay, this is, somebody mark this date on a calendar.
Although technically it's not a house.
Yes, I will point out that I've always wanted to see a ghost. And I never have. I, when we get further into the stories, I'll explain the closest that I've gotten to one.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's one of those things where I don't really believe in ghosts, but I want to see one. I want to be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
but I do have, we have great, amazing ghost stories, but, haunted house stories. But I have one that was a prank that's hilarious.
And, wonderful.
We can begin. Whoever wants to begin, jump in.
Well, I'll just toss the question out there. We're talking about haunted houses, real and imagined. So we, of course, are going to cover, any experiences we may have had with the paranormal or the supernatural, or have had friends of friends or cousins of cousins of uncles of uncles, or somebody's cop worked on that case many years ago and their second cousin was my brother's best friend or something like that. We all have those stories, so we're going to do some of that. We're also going to talk about imagined haunted houses, be it motion pictures or local spook houses that we have fond memories of, because some of those can be lots and lots of fun. By the way, the opening that I parroted earlier was Thurl Ravencroft in the Haunted Mansion long playing 33 and a third LP. When I was a kid, I listened to that thing over and over and over again and memorized the entire thing. It was my favorite record.
I kept waiting for
child.
The sound effects to come in.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody of a certain age owned that album. Certainly my sister and I played it over and over and over again. And
this is the one with young Ronnie Howard as Mike, who was one of the kids that go into the house with Karen, his girlfriend. And in the Disneyland Haunted Mansion story and song from the Haunted Mansion, they played bits and pieces from Disneyland's Haunted Mansion and had a different ghost host. It wasn't Paul Frees doing the ghost host. It was someone else doing ghost host, but this had parts of the ride in it. But it was a little scary. It actually gave a nice little backstory, which Disney wisely eliminated from the actual ride. There was no backstory in the ride. It's just a conglomeration of scenes. It's a gathering with spooks. It's a retirement home for spooks, the Haunted Mansion.
Right.
Even though a lot of fan fiction exists about Master Gracie and who owns the house and blah, 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 none of that was ever planned. It's an unofficial origin or unofficial story of the Haunted Mansion. Essentially, Walt Disney built a house and invited ghosts from all over the world to take residence in this house, which makes sense, considering you have medieval ghosts, Egyptian mummy ghosts, revolutionary era ghosts, you know, the knights and kings and queens along with, you know, Victorian and revolutionary era ghosts. I mean, they're all mixed together, so that's a lot of fun. So Disney's mansion, obviously not real, but certainly influential
to so many different people, generations of people. I want to ask about real experiences, of course. I want to hear any kind of encounters that any one of us may have had with the supernatural. Mickey, what about you?
There's a hotel, literally right next to the Alamo, that when my wife and I got married, we decided to honeymoon in San Antonio because, you know, it's a honeymoon on a budget. We couldn't go to Paris or anything.
Hey, San Antonio's nice.
She doesn't like to fly, so.
that is a problem to get to Paris.
Yeah, it's not a flying problem. She just doesn't like being poked by the TSA. I knew the Menger Hotel because I lived in San Antonio for a year.
The Menger. Okay.
M-E-N-G-E-R. I knew it was right next to the Riverwalk, which is awesome. It's across the street from the Ripley's, believe it or not, which is awesome.
Awesome.
Yes, I've been to the Ripley's, believe it or not. It is actually quite good.
It's literally catacorner from the Alamo. And it turned out that our suite, which was fantastic, a huge bathtub, a living room bigger than our house, you know, and a bedroom that you had to walk upstairs inside the bedroom to get to the bed. I mean, this was a great honeymoon suite.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a corner that overlooked the Alamo. So we're checking in, and Michelle suddenly realizes that she knows why this hotel sounded familiar. It's considered one of the most haunted hotels in the United States.
Yes.
Which I didn't know. I mean, it's old. And it's got beautiful floors and all this other stuff like that. And it actually has two sections. There's the newer section that we're in. Mm-hmm. And then there's the classic rooms, which, you know, are shoeboxes, basically, because it's an older, I mean, it's Old West stuff. And they just kind of blend seamlessly together. And we're like, oh, well, this is an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wound up spending, although aside from the fact that the wind did some interesting things with the doors to the porch, since we were a corner room and it would rattle them in the middle of the night, we didn't see anything ourselves. What we saw was a ton of people walking around. This is pre-Pokemon Go. Walking around, staring at their cell phones, holding it up to the air, looking for ghosts through their cell phones.
Oh,
that's odd.
Interesting. Well, now, what? Not to date you or your lovely wife. What year did you get married?
Okay. Yeah, 2013. Mm-hmm. This was before Pokemon Go. They were just using their phones to look for anything because of the electromagnetic
EVP.
Yeah. So we stocked up on salt, and you know, we're good little supernatural fans. And
well, you know, the Alamo is considered one of the most haunted areas of in the United States. Just of course, given what happened there, that makes perfect sense.
Yes. And that's just it too. You talk about the areas or the origins of these types of things. My ex-wife and I took a ghost tour in San Francisco many years ago, and one of the things that I always will remember from this person who was giving the ghost tour is that he told us his belief in what ghosts are, and it made sense. I really liked this interpretation or this thought. He said that ghosts are energy imprinted upon time.
Mm-hmm.
A traumatic experience, a high emotional experience, something that happened that took the energy that we all have as human beings and somehow imprinted that energy in the scope of time and repeats, and it's there and it kind of lingers.
It's basically a record. And
essentially,
if it's extremely traumatic, the record skips.
Right. Right. And I like that. I like that because it's easy. It's more palatable to me to think of things like that. And I do think that buildings, houses, churches absorb energy. I think we as living beings have so much emotional energy, and that comes out in various ways. And, you know, they always hear the story about the suicide bride that's lurking in the attic but it's always associated with some high emotional experience. Murder, of course, is terribly emotional, from what I understand.
Suicide murders tend to be the number one reason that people see ghosts, and it is usually like the lovers pining for each other who were never allowed to, the doomed lovers were never allowed to be together, the woman betrayed by her lover, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
And of course, that's just basically what ghosts are, right? Ghosts are, they have unfinished business.
Right.
And so that is the reason why they linger. But I love that energy, given what we know about, about the universe now, and it's all just vibrating strings and energy all interconnected. It's never destroyed. It's just transitioned from one form into another. That works for me. That's a great explanation for a ghost.
And from a Doctor Who standpoint, which would... The pseudoscience of Doctor Who works there, as well as, I mean, the manga was built in 1859. In addition to the Alamo, there was a maid killed there. There's supposedly like 38 different named ghosts that live in the manga. It's also where Teddy Roosevelt recruited the Rough Riders.
So
it's a fixed point in time, to use the Doctor Who.
Yeah, very much so. But you mentioned, you know, the Alamo, of course, and Gettysburg apparently is another very haunted place. Any kind of that kind of trauma, talk about unfinished business, young soldiers getting blown to pieces, and in their last seconds of life, desperately bemoaning the fact that they'll never see a loved one or never get to hold their baby or never get to see their wife or whatever. You know, their life is gone. It's over. Yeah. That's a lot of energy that's pouring out of these dying people, and it's everywhere. Some places you just – and I will preface this by saying, ladies and gentlemen, that I, your fearless touchstone and emotional host – see what I did there? I've never, ever had a ghostly experience. And I am extremely open-minded, and I've been on so many different ghost tours. I've taken my own personal private ghost tours where I drive across Texas to go to haunted places with a tape recorder a la Kolchak and a camera, and I'm sitting there waiting. I want to see something, hear something, desperate, nothing. I've never, ever even had a cold spot, a chill, strange noises in the night, nothing. And it drives me crazy because I desperately want to see it, and I'm open. I know that there's something. There has to be, but I have not been blessed or cursed, depending on how you look at it, with that experience.
I know what'll happen. You'll finally stumble across something that you'll swear is a ghost, and it actually turns out to be an invisible man.
There you go, see? Wouldn't that just be typical?
Light refraction zero, ladies and gentlemen, the invisible man. Can it be done? But I do honestly think that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophies. So there's a level of me that just says, give it time. Somehow, some way, something will happen. You'll hear something. You'll see something. But I know many manifestations of the supernatural have nothing to do with full floating apparitions or physical or visual proof. There's a feeling, a touch, a cold spot. You know.
And even then, I mean, given the fact that also, you know, people can experience dreams. You know, there's the night terrors where you are partly awake, partly asleep, and you see something that is so vivid, you swear it happened, the person was there, and this is a known phenomenon. I think that's essentially what happened. My only actual coming close to supernatural ghost experience was we had gone to England, and one of the places that we stayed in was the Red Lion Inn. In Avebury, is that how you pronounce that? A-V-E-B-U-R-Y. Anyway, we had stayed at the Red Lion Inn in Avebury, and there is a famous 86-foot deep well there that they have covered over with this plastic acrylic cover. So you look into it. It dates back to the 1600s. It's named after Alexander Keiler, I think is how you pronounce his name, who excavated an ancient stone circle surrounding the inn. You know, it's one of those, like, you know, most haunted places, supposedly. I mean, that's what they tell tourists in England. And we had booked some of the rooms, and we were staying there. The pub is wonderful. We gone down to the pub and had dinner and some of the best. Best beer and ale and such that you could imagine. But,
here.
We'd gone out to go to bed. I was sharing a room with my then roommate, Scott Jones, and he had fallen asleep. I'd fallen asleep. And one of the rooms that we were in was one of the ones where people had supposedly seen supernatural things. Supernatural things had happened. So I thought, you know, going to bed with that in mind, I have that already in my head. I'm thinking the entire evening we're eating, wow, this place is haunted. There's ghosts here. Mm-hmm. So I was already psychologically prepping myself to experience something. And sure enough, at some point in the night, I woke up. No idea what time it was. I'm guessing it was probably 2 or 3 in the morning. And there is a dark figure of a man that is standing over my bed. He's just standing right beside my bed. I can't make out any features, but it's definitely a man, broad shoulders, very, very menacing, looming there. And he started to bend over as if he was going to say something to me. And I did one of those like I suddenly felt like I should yell, I should scream, I should do something.
Right.
And then blink, and he's gone. And I'm looking over, and my roommate is sound asleep, never noticed anything, just, you know, and I look around the room, and there's nothing. There's nothing.
Wow. Wow.
So again, was that a combination of one of those waking nightmares where you see something in the room and it's actually close to you and you feel like, oh, there's something here. And then you wake up and you realize, no, I'm awake, but I'm still dreaming.
Yeah. What year was this?
This was probably, I want to say 15 years ago, probably 15 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You know, it's maybe weird.
Around 98, 99.
Oh, that's so weird. Okay. I have to share this about 15 years ago, I guess around that same time, I was in England and I was really drunk and I wandered into what I thought was my hotel room, but I guess I was in the wrong one. I remember standing in the room and I thought, why, who's in my bed? And I leaned in and I thought the guy was choking, so I really got the heck out of there. And I never told anyone about that. That's really weird.
Okay.
No. All right. Beautiful. No, I think that things are, you know, again, I'm open. Guys, I want to try something real quick. Let's hold hands. Put your drink down. Aaron, put your drink down.
Sorry.
All right. Take my hand. All right. I want everyone to open your minds. I want everyone to clear your minds. Deep breath. No, we're not meditating. Stop drinking.
Okay.
All right. Just hold the hands. All right. Open your minds. I want you to reach out to the great beyond. I want you to reach out to that presence we know is in the room. Mark Finn, are you in the room? If you're in the room, give us a sign.
I can hear you.
Oh my God!
That's him.
It's like Carol Ann.
Did that come from the jukebox? I don't know where he is.
Just as long as he doesn't possess Maximilian.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, please.
There's only room in there for Reinhardt, and that's it.
Joseph, is that you?
Yes, Mark. Reach. Go to the light, Mark. Go to the light.
All are welcome. All are welcome.
This is the bathroom.
Aaron's palms are sweaty.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
You can stop holding it. Hey, we were just, you know, talking about haunted houses and stuff.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Spirits, as it were. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, anyway, we talked about, haunted places, as you've heard. We talked about energy, spirits, murder, emotional feedback, timeless wavelengths, things like that. Mark, do you got any real ghost stories you want to share or experiences with the supernatural?
Now, we've already said that I've never actually seen a ghost, although I shared an experience that was the most ghost-like, but I think it was just one of those night terror things. And Joseph has never experienced an actual ghost.
Well, gentlemen, refresh your drinks. I actually lived in a haunted house.
We could be here a while.
Nice.
It was a house in a rural part of Central Texas, and it used to be a dairy farm. The area out there was basically pastures and cows, and this was like the main house, and it sits in the middle of a block with stuff all around it. And at the time that we bought it, it was a big drafty two-story house. And everybody called it the haunted house. Now, they called it the haunted house because the man that owned the property, the grandson of the Denisons, would come in every once in a while, and he would do something on the property. And at night, he'd turn on a light in the back, which is where the kitchen was, where he could eat and read his newspaper and drink coffee. And so, you know, lights would come on at night. Right. I got you. Now I should preface this by saying we never saw anything, okay? There was never a full torso vaporous apparition. No class 5 roaming vapors or phantasms. But stuff would happen. And the woman that lived in the house and was there basically until she died, Mrs. Denison, was sort of the matriarch of the clan, and she was very particular. for example, my mom used to watch Donahue.
Nice.
Right. Just to firmly ground this as a story taking place in the 1980s. And she would watch Donahue. Well, that came on opposite I Love Lucy. And if my mom was not in the room, like if she was doing housework or something and Donahue was on, the TV would change to I Love Lucy. There was one room in the house that none of the pets would go in. It was the upstairs room where she did her sewing. Spent apparently a lot of time in there. And there was, the roofs of the, were pitched in the house. And there were doorways that you could open up to actually walk inside the hollow parts of the slanted roof. Well, that's where they hung their laundry, to dry, I guess, because it was, hot, but not, directly in the sun or whatever. But anyways, she had a workroom that, that I turned into a little gaming den. We could not get a dog nor a cat. No animal would go into that room at all. It just would not go in. And, there were other little things that would happen. Sometimes the rocking chairs would rock by themselves. And sometimes, the coffee filters would move in the kitchen. We used to keep, my parents keep the coffee filters on top of the coffee maker. That apparently was not how Mrs. Dennison liked it done. So, you know, there was little stuff like that, you know.
And so it was, so you said it was like a ranch, like a farm?
It was a big farmhouse, you know.
Okay. Did you all have chickens?
We actually did keep chickens, as a matter of
fact. You did? Yeah. I know what it was. It was a poultrygeist.
I would like to disassociate myself with this podcast.
We need to cut him off. Yes.
He's
officially had too much.
I can't, he's still
and by the
going.
Way, while we're here, can I get another corpse reviver, please?
Yes, yes. Let's go ahead and order another round. So, did you ever find out anything about the history of the house? And that's the thing that fascinates me the most about haunted places, is that when you hear this happened and that happened and this happened, you think, oh, well, of course it's haunted. That's terrible.
Well,
did anything like that happen in the house?
Nothing in that house. But there was another house that we lived in Abilene that had... we did get some history about that, and it was a colorful history. The house that we lived in Abilene was an old boarding house, the kind where there was an upstairs kitchen and a downstairs kitchen, and there were, and every room was its own thing, you know? It was a really big, it was more house than any of us could ever have used, but it literally was designed to house like, you know, 8 people. I mean, it was intentionally built that way. It was real strange. My parents thought I was insane for the 2 years that we lived in there, because they were always running downstairs because they were convinced that I was downstairs making noise. I was never downstairs making noise. I was always upstairs building models or reading, you know, Alfred Hitchcock mysteries or whatever. Occasionally, I'd sneak downstairs to watch a horror movie that I couldn't, you know, see until like 11:30 at night. But there was one room by the den, which was the family workroom. It's where the sewing was done and glass making and all this kind of junk. And the house had wooden floors. This was built in the 1920s. And my parents insisted that they could hear somebody walking downstairs on that floor. Now, I never heard this myself, but it got so bad that they went and asked the lady that they bought the house from, Mrs. Odom. And they said, what? She says, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I keep hearing footsteps in that room. And she said, oh, that's just Harold. And mom said,
no.
Yeah,
right.
Her husband was a trader on the stock market in the 1920s, and he managed to avoid Black Friday, but was... essentially tax evasion. He hid a bunch of money. IRS found out about it. They were going to send him to federal prison. And this was something that dragged out over about a year, and that was his office where he used to pace at night trying to figure out a way out of the situation. And when it became clear that he had no way out and was going to go to jail, he hung himself in that room. And so, and I always wondered, you know, of course, you know, you don't get this stuff until later, you know? Right. And they're like, well, we didn't want to scare you. I'm like, what are you talking about? I wasn't going to scare you. I would have spent the night in that room. Are you kidding me?
But, you know, today I think that aren't real estate agents obligated to share things like that? If something like that happens, I think there's an actual law or a rule.
Yeah, but in this case, in both instances, we bought from the owner directly. You know.
Right. No. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know,
there was some sort of violent crime. It was like a murder or suicide or something.
Supposed to say.
Right.
Supposed to tell you.
This was definitely you know, a thing, and it was so long ago. Now, keep in mind, I never got creeped out there, and nobody else did either. And it only was late at night, you know, when they would hear it, because their bedroom was right above that,
right.
And so that's how they were hearing it. But I always wondered. What I always wanted to do was go back and check the books and see if there was something that he missed.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could, like, solve the math problem for him, like, he would go away. I know that's goofy.
Yeah, you would.
That's 15 years.
You would finish his unfinished business. That's wonderful.
You know what? That's it. Mark Finn, CPA to the Supernatural Ghost.
Supernatural CPA!
That's right. Are you haunting your place of residence because of a inverted number? Perhaps you forgot to carry the two? We'll call Mark Finn, CPA to the Supernatural.
See, I don't believe any of this stuff. That's just imaginary numbers.
I'm your paranormal
Kolchak, the night actuary.
Don't spend purgatory wondering what you did wrong. Call the experts.
Oh, my God. We'll actuary to the damned. Love it.
There you go. We need business cards ASAP.
Yes.
Those are my haunted house stories. So
Joseph, did you have one that you have not told us before?
Well, I do want to share one location that I made a pilgrimage to and make this pilgrimage every year.
Nice.
Because I'm in New Orleans every year. It's one of my favorite cities in the entire world. And it's a little slice of European city right there in the middle of the United States. Just beautiful. The culture, the food. Anyway, you guys may have heard this before. You know, it's one of the more famous haunted houses, and that is the house that resides on Royal Street, 1140 Royal Street, and it was the LaLaurie Mansion.
Oh God, yes.
Yeah, that's pretty well known, and you can go there, and I go there every year to stand outside and stare at it.
Didn't Nicolas Cage buy that?
He did, but he sold it because he couldn't do anything with it. It was a furniture store for a while, but furniture would be destroyed every morning. They'd go in, and everything was tore up and smeared with feces, and it was a mess. It was a horrible thing. Nasty ghosts. But these were ghosts who had every right to be upset and nasty. As the rumor goes, Delphine LaLaurie, Madame LaLaurie, in the year of 1834, was discovered to have had hideously tortured her slaves at the time in the attic of this house, and stringing them up by their necks and had metal collars and horrible open wounds. Some people said she did horrible experiments on them. I mean, the stories got obviously blown out of proportion, but she mistreated them severely. And then in 1834, a mob descended upon her house because it was, you know, because of the mistreatment of these slaves, and they broke in the house and they ran her out of town. She was on a rail. She was run out of town.
Wasn't there a slave who had been chained to the kitchen?
Yes.
And she lit the place on fire.
Yes, she started a fire.
That's how they discovered the horror.
That's right. That's right. In fact, one of the young slaves, a young girl, jumped out of one of the upper story windows into the courtyard below rather than spend another night being tortured by Madame LaLaurie. And that window where she jumped out is still broken out. It's boarded up it's been bricked up. If you see to the side of the mansion, you'll see there's like three windows, and then the last one is bricked up. And that supposedly, again, could be just stories, but that's where she supposedly left out of the window. There used to be a wax museum in New Orleans, the Museum de Conti on Conti Street. And in their Chamber of Horrors, in their History of New Orleans section, there's a Madame LaLaurie exhibit, and they have her realized in wax. And it's a really creepy tableau of the attic, and it's dark, dimly lit, and the slaves are terrified, crouching in the corners, and LaLaurie is holding the candelabra in one hand, and she's got the whip in the other, and it's a hideous, terrifying image, although strangely beautiful. They made her look really, really pretty.
I think there's actually portraits of her. She was considered quite a beautiful woman in her youth.
Yeah.
In fact, that's one of the rumors of why she was torturing slaves, is to find a way to keep herself, like Elizabeth Bathory, eternally beautiful and eternally young. And who knows if she actually, hit upon some ritual or voodoo secret to do that, but that's supposedly one of the reasons why she was tortured. And for fans of American Horror Story, the character of Delphine Lalaurie features prominently in the season called Coven, which takes place in New Orleans and
which
played
is one
by
of my
Kathy Bates.
Seasons, but a lot of people don't like it.
We loved it. Played wonderfully, wonderfully by Kathy Bates. It's a very, very, creepy, I can't believe nobody's made a movie out of
it is truly a spectacular haunted story. The ghost tours in New Orleans always love to dwell around that, and there's a huge presentation, and there's every ghost hunter in the world goes out there. It's supposedly a very, very haunted house. And again, the emotions involved, the cruelty, of the Lalaurie and what she did to the slaves, reportedly. Now, years later, you find out that, things like somebody was trying to run her out of town for whatever political reason. Her husband was a famous doctor, I think, and maybe she had a lot of influence in the rich upper class, and nobody liked her, and they said horrible things about her. Who knows?
Right.
I mean, newspapers give an account of what happened. There was a fire. They did find slaves chained up in the attic, but to the extent that we hear, though, she was breaking their bones and setting them so they could be like human crabs crawling around up on the, I mean, creepy crap that people are making this up and going, she put a bullhead on this guy and she did this one over here and she poured maggots in this one's open wound and did horrible things, to torture them. A lot of that might be blowing the
embellishment
in a bit. Yeah. Out of proportion. But it's still a very creepy story. And if you're ever in New Orleans, just go to 1140 Royal Street. That is the Lalaurie Mansion. Well, you could see the house itself.
I have to admit, in the United States, that's one of my favorites, probably one of my favorite of the haunted houses, the horrible places of horror that have taken place. Lalaurie is a fascinating character. We had included her in a screenplay that we were working on years ago. And then, of course, the American Horror Story came out. And we're like, okay, well, there goes that story.
Darn.
Yeah, we won't write about Lalaurie anymore. Yeah. But no, that's a great – that's probably – I've been to New Orleans. I've never been to the Lalaurie Mansion.
Oh, definitely,
When I go back, I want to visit the Lalaurie Mansion.
You've been to Paradise, but you've never been to the Lalaurie Mansion?
That's right. That's right. But now, I want to tell you all quick a prank haunted house story that I actually was a part of and experienced, and it was hilarious. Well, after the fact, of course. My family owned a ranch house out on Palmetto Hill in Brownsville, Texas. It's one of the sites, one of the last battlefields of the war, the Spanish U.S. war, Mexico, sorry, U.S. war. So already there's all kinds of stories out there, haunted battlefields, and you can go out and actually find musket balls and, things like that. There's, I think, the remains of cannons out there. So already that area is very, very haunted. We had stories in our ranch house of a woman who would be seen walking across the field, and she would walk into the house, and walk into the fireplace. When you walk in, there's the main entryway, and then there was a sort of a living room that had a fireplace, and she would disappear into the fireplace. And we all knew this. The story had been told for years and years and years. My grandfather used to tell it, and I think his father told him about it. So it'd been around for a while. Well, one of my uncles decided that it would be hilarious to record a bunch of sounds. And I believe actually some of the sounds were from that damn LP,
this kind of the really chilling sounds of the haunted house.
And the chains rattling from the Disney LP of haunted sounds. And he used one of those old-fashioned, tape recorders that we all had. We used to record music off the radio on those. You push the two buttons, the rectangular. And he recorded a bunch of these sounds. And then there was a portrait, sort of a weird portrait of, I believe it was a woman. I don't even remember what the portrait was of. And he dug out a hole in the wall behind it, put the recorder back there, covered it up again, hung the painting in place, and pushed play. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we're all sitting there at the ranch house getting ready to have a cookout or whatever we're doing, and we start hearing moans, and we start hearing chains rattling, and wind and stuff, and it got so, we were so freaked out. We didn't know any of this, so right. We were terrified. And it got to the point where there was this old cross that used to, I think, was in a cemetery that was there. And it was an old wooden cross that was hung over the fireplace. My grandfather had taken the cross off of the fireplace with my other uncle, not the uncle who was in on it, but the other uncle, and my grandmother and me and my sister were carrying him. He's holding the cross up. It's like a scene out of The Exorcist. He's holding the cross up to the painting, and he's saying, "Who are you? What do you want?" And we were so terrified. Sister and I are in tears. We're hugging each other. It was really scary. It was straight out of a movie. So my uncle, who's passed away, Gene, saw that we were terrified, scooped me and my sister up, took us into the next room, and let us in on the gag. He said, No, don't be afraid. It's all fake. It's a tape recorder, and I put it in there in the wall. I just wanted to see what everybody would do."
Mm.
So we come back in, and now we're like, you know, listening to the sounds, and we're like, "Oh, yeah, we do recognize some of those sounds." And, oh, my Lord, eventually, of course, the cat was out of the bag, and my uncle just burst out laughing.
Yeah.
Immediately, my grandfather goes after him. My other uncle goes after him. He's out the door, bolting over the fence.
I know this is not what happened, but in my brain, I have an image of recording the thrilling, chilling sounds of the haunted house, putting it behind the wall like you described, and the moans and the horrible sounds. But then suddenly there's this voice going, "You are a bold and courageous person, afraid of nothing. High on a hilltop near your home, there stands a dilapidated old mansion. Some say the place is haunted, but you don't believe in such myths." And you're like, "Why is that coming from the wall?"
Exactly.
Who is that?
Oh, my
life is
hilarious. That was hilarious. Hilarious. And so, yeah, so we were witness to one of the, from what I can tell, one of the first ghost pranks. Now, of course, they're so common on YouTube, but it was so, at the time, we were terrified.
That's a wonderful,
we were terrified.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do something like that. I always love the stories where they debunk the haunted house and they show that there were magnets holding the pictures on the walls and all that kind of stuff. I've always wanted to do something like that.
Something very elaborate. My television horror host character that I did for many years, Professor Griffin, started out as a barker for a haunted house. I used to design haunted houses in Houston, and one of them was themed as the Circus of Horrors, Professor Griffin's Circus of Horrors. And the character was created to be the owner and operator of this mysterious Circus of Horrors, a la Dr. Lau kind of thing.
Right.
Lo. Dr. Lo. Anyway, so that's where Griffin came from, but, yeah, I would have a lot of fun doing haunted houses and designing the rooms and the optimal scare factors where, you know, the misdirection, loud noises, the creep factor, always a good thing. I've been to many, many haunted houses, and what I love about them, when they're done right, there's a build-up, and then there's the pop. And what's disappointing sometimes in the fancier haunted houses, you see, you know, the great sets, and oh my gosh, the lighting and the sound effects, and this is great, it looks like I'm really in a movie, and where's the monster? Surely there's a monster. Oh, there he is, he's just standing there. Okay, moving on. I mean, there's no,
right.
I don't know, there's a way to do it, and a way to do it well, to pull an audience in, give them an illusion, create that little slice of horror that they have to get through, and some of the best haunted houses that I've been through have been not the big fancy ones that charge $40 a ticket, the little neighborhood ones, the little JC haunted houses that you go to, right?
Yeah.
I always remember one in my neighborhood when I was growing up. It was somebody's house. They did a little haunted house. I think they were collecting money for March of Dimes or UNICEF or something. And we crawled through the window. That's how we got into the haunted house. I mean, we couldn't do this now because they'd sue. Someone would get a splinter and sue.
Right.
But you literally had to crawl through the window of the back of the house. And you'd go through the haunted house rooms and go out through the front door. And I still remember the one scene in the kitchen. There was a woman on a table, and it was a classic hole in the table, woman with her leg down inside the table, and with a nasty meat bone in place of her leg. And this guy wearing this horror mask of some kind, wearing a wife beater and carrying a meat cleaver, and was hacking that leg with all his might, and she's screaming bloody murder, and there's a strobe light going on at the same time. He was moving really weird, and it was just that image in my head. I could still see it and feel that my stomach just drop, going, oh my God, what is that? You know, and she's screaming. She's like, acting her ass off, just screaming in pain as this guy's hacking up her chewed up leg, you know, for some horrible thing he's going to do later. Who knows? But those are always kind of raw, you know, raw and unfettered. And I like that in haunted houses.
Well, there's a, I saw you all went, there's a haunted house here in Austin that they do every year called the House of Torment. Mm-hmm. And, I keep threatening to take Elena, you know, she's gonna be 12, and I'm like, you're old enough, you can go to this thing. And then she gets really excited. She's like, oh, Dad, this is gonna be so much fun, Daddy, until we're actually like, okay, well, we're gonna go get the tickets now, and she chickens out. She's like, no, I don't wanna go, Daddy, I changed my mind. I'm like, honey, but it'll be so much fun. No, it won't. And then a few days go by, and she's like, okay, maybe we could do it.
Yeah.
And you know, isn't just that the experience of a haunted house? Is that people? It's that combination of fascination and yet dread and terror. Where you're like
the dare. You know, go ahead. I dare you knock on that door. Go ahead. Go knock on the Myers house. Go ahead.
Well, you know, when you go to a haunted house, you know you're going to be scared. Like you're not going to find nothing. You're going to find something. And I like the ones that I have noticed that there's been a shift in the haunting community, towards a kind of a story. It's either a specific place or a scenario or best both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I haven't been to one. We have one here locally that I've walked through, A Nightmare on Main Street. Right. And I know everybody that's involved with it, and it's, you know, they have a really good, time with it. It's really fun. But the last one that I went to that had that kind of story was in either Dallas or Fort Worth. That was about 10 years ago.
And, is this Thrillvania?
No, this was I forget what it was called, but the shtick was, it's a chemical lab. And you no sooner get in there when they have a core breach, a meltdown, and they do this wonderful thing at the beginning where they're disorienting you. And now they've got to evacuate the building, and you're part of the people being evacuated. And as you're going through, you're seeing, you know, the labs now have rampant zombies running through and smashing up against the glass. And it's just great stuff.
Yeah,
but there's 2 points that I really liked. When you turn the corner, there's a long corridor that you step out into, and you have the choice of going left or right. And when you look right, there is a zombie at the end of the hallway, and he's got a shovel, and he's dragging it on the ground.
Oh, that's a great noise.
That sound, you know, that sound of metal on gravel,
concrete.
It's that, that horrible. It's almost fingernails on a chalkboard. And they did a really good job. They had several instances where that was happening, and they were just kind of walking towards you like the caretakers, and you're like, we're not going to go this way.
Exactly.
And the exit to the haunted house was actually one of the best things of all. They had a helicopter mounted on a hilltop, and you made it out. You're outside. The blades are turning not very fast, but it's an actual helicopter. Mm-hmm. And there's a guard. There's a guy in military gear waving you to the helicopter. You know, mm-hmm. And he just keeps waving you towards the helicopter. And then when you get up on it, he turns and looks at you, and it's a zombie.
Oh, nice.
And then like the rest of the helicopter, you get into the helicopter and slide, you know, that takes you out.
Wow, nice.
Yeah. But it was nice. The one last thing is, oh, I'm not safe. I'm getting on the zombie copter, you know. It was really
fun. Zombie copter. I've always wanted to do, it'd be impossible. It'd be way too unsafe. And like, as Joseph said, you know, somebody would sue. But I've always wanted to help organize a haunted house on a body of water where you go in with your swimsuits, whatever, on an inner tube, and you're floating along, and then things happen. but it's all aquatic themed. It's all things under the water.
Oh, yeah.
Things that are clutching at your legs. Things that come popping out right next to you.
There's no way
you know,
I would
like
do
a,
that in a million years.
Could you,
that would
exactly. Could you imagine? I
Deep
I,
rising
myself,
a ride.
Exactly. I myself would be unable to do a ride like that because that is my fear, to be floating on a body of water, a dark body of water, and you know there are things down there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But some of those, you mentioned storylines. I mean, here in Austin also, we had the Lord Britain's Manor,
oh,
Richard Garriott.
Yes.
Oh, he would do those really well.
Outrageously.
Britannia Manor.
Britannia yeah. Manor was the haunted experience that he would do every year, and all the money went to a great cause. And he'd have actors hired to play roles. It was interactive. You had to do, and it wasn't just to walk through a haunted house. You had to crawl through tunnels,
yeah.
leap over, swing over rivers. You got wet, muddy, running through the woods
at night.
You would
get hints
yeah.
and artifacts that you had to
oh,
use.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. And there's some amazing footage of some of the stuff that he would do out there. Likewise, there's a place in Terrell, Texas called Thrillvania. That's what I thought you were talking about, Mark. And they have a place called Haunted Verdun Manor.
Yes.
And the
oh,
theme
I've heard of
is, yeah, you know Verdun Manor? The theming is that Baron Verdun was a werewolf and his wife was a witch and they lived in this, they built this manor, this amazing gothic manor house out of, boxcars, out of railroad boxcars.
Uh-huh.
And they're all connected and it's classic. Looks like a psycho mansion. It's a beautiful thing.
And if you don't know, Lance, the man who, built it, mm-hmm. gave up working on Gremlins 2 in order to do that. He wanted to do this so bad.
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
It is gorgeous.
Is it still there? Does it still live?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Lance,
oh,
unfortunately,
yeah.
is not. He also saved great cats, and one of his saviors got him, or I'm sorry, one
wow.
of his savees got him
oh,
in the leg,
no.
and,
wow.
and he died a couple days later.
Damn.
I wonder if that, I mean, you talk about traumatic death.
Yeah.
That would be one right there.
Yeah.
Killed by a giant great
he,
cat.
He was one of the ones, he was one of the good ones that saved them from, like, when people had them as
yeah.
pets and didn't know
oh,
what
I
to
see.
Do with them. He
Right, right.
The only wow. reason he wasn't killed immediately was because one of the other lions stopped the lion that attacked him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, that Verdun Manor, they had a sequence of going into the house. I remember climbing up into Verdun Manor, and at first you were kind of walking side by side with your companions, but then it would get narrower and narrower and narrower where you had to be in a straight line one after another. And as you were going upstairs, it would get hotter. It would become, the temperature would change. It was very unique.
Wow.
When you went down, it got colder. You know, they had areas that were temperature set.
Wow.
They did a really wonderful job, and the werewolves were, you know, full prosthetic, you
yeah.
know, snout werewolves walking on stilts with,
like,
you know,
really
wires. Yeah,
yeah those reverse, yeah. the reverse feet werewolves that
yes.
Underworld
yeah.
made
yeah.
popular.
Mm-hmm.
He would go to conventions dressed in that years before Underworld came
yeah.
out.
I've heard about this guy and,
yeah, he's cool.
I've wanted to see this thing for years.
Terrell, Texas.
Somebody
so
that I know
there.
Worked with him. And that was that was like a really he was a real giving guy, you know. He was
yeah.
one of those people that
a
you know, if you had an interest, he would give you something to hammer on or paint or whatever, just that you could you know join in. You know, he was one of those kind of guys, a teacher and a mentor to a lot of people.
And dear listeners, if anybody remembers Lance's last name, please let us know. It's Bob.
That's fantastic. Oh, my God. If this all is going on, we should do a pilgrimage.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing. And it's I think it's like they have when I went, they had a sideshow of displays, like freak show kind of
yes.
thing. And they had the Verdun Manor, and then they had a hayride was another one that you'd go on Sam Haines Haunted Hayride or Samhain's Haunted Hayride,
right.
everyone said. That sort of thing. But it's a lot of fun. It's a great bit, and there's three attractions. It's a 50-acre park. Lance Pope, by the
That's
way.
That's it,
was
Lance
his name.
Pope.
Oh, there
Lance
you go,
Pope.
Lance Pope, yes.
Right.
And it's in Terrell, Texas, and it's been there for years. Every year, it's huge. And they got food, they got music.
Is it still
year
round? Because that was his
yeah,
goal.
No, it's not year
okay,
round.
Okay, that was his goal was to have it year round.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's hard to sustain.
Yes.
I can't imagine any kind of a haunted attraction. Now, the guys who do things like a House of Torment, and the other one who had Mansion of Terror for a while there, then I think he went out outside of Bastrop. He's got a little haunted park outside of Bastrop that he has several haunted houses. But that's all these guys do. I mean,
yeah, that's their world.
Thousands of people go through there, you know, in September, October, maybe even November sometimes, and pay $40-$50 a pop for 300 or 400 experiences. And that's all he does. He doesn't have a day job. That's his job. Right, right. That's his
all
life.
All year he prepares for that.
Yeah,
show,
he goes
yeah.
to conventions. He buys prosthetics and animatronics and lighting and special effects. And it's a fantastic job. They look amazing. And
I would love for us fellows at some point, the gentleman nerds, to get us to go to a horror convention. Hmm. I know they have some in Texas. There's one in Houston, I believe.
The Metroplex,
Texas Nightmares.
The Metroplex is first weekend in May. Texas
Frightmare.
Frightmare, isn't it?
Yeah.
Texas Frightmare.
I would love to get us going to one of those great horror conventions.
Did Fright Year the first inaugural year when I was doing Griffin with Fangoria TV. That was a guest there at the very first Texas Frightmare convention. And it's a good convention. I mean, you know, again, very first year, it's gotten bigger and bigger since then. So,
That is the one genre that is always going to be popular, no matter what happens. What other trends, markets, buyers, makers, producers, horror is always going to sell. Always.
It will indeed.
And my wife just sent over a drink from the bar with a note to tie in with the floating horror thing that you wanted to do, Aaron. That in Houston they used to show Jaws at night in front of a wave pool.
Oh yeah.
No, that I'm familiar with. And so I was just thinking if we could take it one step further and then just this is what's happened. You all were on some kind of a boat, luxury cruise, and it sank. And so you are now on these little life preservers, even if you were like on little rafts, and there were groups of three or four of you. And you've managed to get to some small island or some area that has all these caves and then just unleash the underwater horror.
The old ones. They would love crafting
and
being old
ones.
Yes, dude,
like, oh my God, you find some ancient temple of the deep ones or something. Yeah. Dagon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord, yeah.
My brain is like, okay, you know how many waivers you'd have to get these people to sign, and how much insurance you'd have to take out on this case somebody drowns.
And not only for the guests coming in, but all the performers would have to be trained in scuba gear and under. Yeah. Oh yeah, it would be a nightmare. It would be a nightmare. But oh my God, imagine I cannot imagine a more terrifying experience.
Well,
floating on water with something below me.
If whichever one of us makes our first million, we need to set aside money on that. Because I have an idea for basically a cornfield maze that is the same sort of it's a vast field of corn you have to navigate your way through and you come to different areas cut away for you. You know, so what I really want to do is I want to build a pathway with the different areas kind of on the ground and then plant the corn around it.
Right.
So, you know, rather
and
than
the twist is at the end, they were always aliens.
They were always aliens.
No. The twist at the end is that they're going to be eaten by he who walks between the rows. I mean, you know, that's the twist.
That's serious.
You were always ever a food for the god, you know?
I got to do this, so a bit of bragging on my part, because I actually got to make this happen in one of my haunted houses, is that Dr. Lowe's Medusa sequence, and I've talked about this before in podcasts, one of my favorite sequences, terrified me as a kid, I always wanted to do a Medusa like that. So I had the theming of the Circus of Horrors, and on display was a Medusa. But the room, the way we designed the room, it was a series of mirrors. As you walk in, you would see the Medusa almost instantly in the dim light, and she had a fader. She could control her own light and bring her visage up and back and up and back. But you're seeing it reflected in a mirror, which was reflecting it from another mirror. I mean, we had the mirror, like, I don't know, 10 mirrors that reflected the image all over the room. And it was dimly lit, and there was gothic music playing, and it was kind of a corridor kind of thing. Because you were going around the corner thinking the Medusa was going to be there because you could see it. And when you turn the corner, no, it's another mirror. It was another mirror.
Fine.
It was another mirror. You know what I'm saying? So you followed it through until the end, of course, where she actually is. But no, I was so proud of that because it came out so well. We had columns and flickery, you know, fake fire flames and just the dim light. It was really neat, really well done.
I haven't done this yet, but one of my goals, like bucket list check off kind of things, is to do an old fashioned 1950s and 60s style spook show here in the movie theater. And what I really want to do is I want to do the old girl with two gorilla gag.
Uh-huh. Yep, yep. Pepper's ghost illusion. Yep,
exactly. And I totally, I just a quick kind of a magic show with corny jokes, and then bring somebody up from the audience, and the whole thing is a plan, you know. But
I was fortunate. Griffin got to do that. I got to host a spook show, and it was delightful. And we did it at the Alamo here, and it was so much fun years ago. The problem with that is the blackout. You know, the traditional blackout at the end of the spook show when they bring the spirits to the real world. Banners, black cloth banners that are turned away from us but are charging the whole time. When they cut the lights out, the banners are turned and are waved around the room, and there's the sky is filled with wispy spirits. It's a very neat effect. Unfortunately, nowadays, fire laws, etc., you can't have a complete blackout. There always has to be some exit sign dimly lit.
Yeah.
You know, for legal purposes. But back then, like you say, in the 50s and 60s, and they'd go blackout. It was black. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. I mean, that's the only way to make that work.
And then that's when the kids would start throwing popcorn. Right.
And groping the girl next to them. Exactly. You know? So it's like, hey, it's a ghost, baby. It's a ghost.
What? Yeah, what me, baby?
Who let Trump in here?
Hey, Mickey?
Yes?
Your wife is here and she just sent you a drink?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm feeling hurt.
Yeah, I know.
Well, she knows I don't drink alcohol, so.
Okay. Yeah, it's prune juice.
Okay.
It's good for his digestion.
Mickey, do you have any stories of fake? I'll say fake haunted houses. It sounds horrible, but you know, entertainment haunted houses.
Well, it's just Verdon Manor.
So you've been to Verdon Manor?
I pseudo work there.
What? Oh, okay.
I was doing ghost work for Lance because Lance was involved. I was involved with a bunch of conventions in Dallas, and Lance was also involved, and our paths crossed, and I started helping him out with some stuff, which is why I knew all that stuff. But I couldn't remember his last name because he was always Lance. And as soon as you said Lance Pope, I'm like, that's it. But
I have
I've still got the jacket, the windbreaker that says Haunted Verdon Manor with that awesome werewolf. It's a Victorian werewolf.
Yeah.
Yes.
With a top hat and everything like that. Very cool. On the windbreaker. I'll wear it next time we go to a haunted house. So. I don't tend to do haunted houses after that.
I'm not a big
haunted house person myself.
After 7-foot Victorian werewolves are stalking amongst the manor, you know.
Difficult to come down.
Yeah, my little bag of Jello that's supposed to be brains doesn't quite fit the bill.
Yeah. Or the cold spaghetti, which is the remember that and I know you do, Mark, but the
grapes for eyeballs.
Yes, the grapes for eyeballs. But that Ray Bradbury story of the October game, or was it the Halloween game? When they're in the cellar and all the lights are off and they're passing around parts of the witch's body, and this is the witch's eyes and these are the witch's lungs and this is the witch's and then some idiot turns on the light. It's just the best ending to a story. And I won't get into it but look it up. It's a Ray Bradbury story. I think it's called the October game or the Halloween game. One of the others. But, great bit. And that's a lot of fun too. There's those old, you know, spook shows. I remember sticking my hand into a bowl of peeled grapes.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what we used to do. Every time our local community or whatever, youth group, they do the haunted house, and sure enough, you go in through. They have the sheets, and you climb through the sheets, and put your hands in the different balls. Oh, look, the eyeballs! These are spiders!
I guess it's to be expected. I mean, we talked about some amazing special effects places that, you know, of course, Disneyland's Haunted Mansion in Disney
World. Which, by the way, is my favorite ride at Disneyland or World, is the Haunted Mansion.
That's simply because you haven't been to China to go to their Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, I've seen videos of Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's spectacular.
Speaking of which, we recently had to get a 4K television because our old TV died. It was, you know, it's horrible. We had to suffer through a 4K television.
Your head.
I know.
There's a 4K recording of going through that ride.
Wow.
Somebody brought a 4K camera onto the ride and posted it on YouTube.
No, I'm hoping that there will be a similar update to the Haunted Mansion in the next few years. To where it's like, really, no, I know, like you, the old, the tried and true, I remember the original rides, but
go build something else, leave it alone, go build something else, just leave
I was just so blown away with the Pirates of the Caribbean
The digital stuff is seamlessly done. Brandy went obviously to China and my girlfriend went to.
And she loved it.
She thought it was great. But you know, there's something charmingly quaint and magical about the original Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland in New Orleans Square with the audio animatronics and the special effects and the smell of the going through the Pirates of the Caribbean, the water in there. I mean, not to get on the pirate thing, but the Haunted Mansion is the same thing. I'm just such a traditionalist when it comes to my Haunted Mansion.
The thing is, it does look like the updated Pirates of the Caribbean effects in China used a lot of the same 3D hologram. There's a ghost in my pod with me as I'm going through the Haunted Mansion, you know, techniques.
Right. Well, that's just a Pepper's Ghost illusion. Yes. The original Disneyland Haunted Mansion with the glass.
But they managed to make it, you know, large scale.
Well, they changed it in Disney World. In Disney World, the hitchhiking ghost, by the way, in case some of you listening have no idea what we're talking about, I'm sorry. But in case those people have no idea what we're talking about, the Haunted Mansion ride, Walt Disney's attraction, the Haunted Mansion, is a part where the ghost host says, "Beware of hitchhiking ghosts. They have selected you to fill our quota, and they'll haunt you until you return." And as you turn the corner, you see the hitchhiking ghosts. There's three of them, and they're kind of the unofficial mascots of the Haunted Mansion. There's a tall, skeletal one, a short, hairy one with a ball and chain, and a doctorial-looking one with a top hat. And they're hitchhiking. They're literally hitchhiking, which gives the origin and the year that this kind of gives you the placement of the year of this creation of these ghosts. Because, you know, hitchhiking ghosts? I mean, who hitchhikes anymore? But anyway, they're hitchhiking, and then you pass them, the animatronics, and then you go into a hallway of mirrors, which you think are mirrors, which are actually panes of glass. Sorry to spoil that. But as you pass through, the ghosts are on the other side, dimly lit. They bring up a little light, and they are right there with you. You see your reflection and the ghost sitting right next to you. And it's a marvelous effect.
And it looks three-dimensional.
It's simple.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's a projected. You know, it's very well done.
And it's not projected at all. All it is a reflection. It's a literal, your eyes are perceiving the reflection on a pane of glass. Like you're walking, if you're in your kitchen and your light is on inside and it's dark outside, but then as you walk toward the glass sliding door, you see your own reflection and you kind of see, it looks like you're standing outside, but you're not, you're really inside. That's the gag. That's the Pepper's Ghost illusion. And it's been going on, you know, for many, many years. It's a real simple but effective gag. In Disney World, they updated the hitchhiking ghost where they are digital projections. And they leap around and they take your head off and they take their heads off and they pop around.
It's great.
Neat, but that's fine. Do that over there. Leave Disneyland alone.
Okay, well then I'm fine. Yeah. As long as like, you know, if they do another, you know, Disney Taiwan or whatever,
right,
and they do a new Haunted Mansion, have it be with state-of-the-art technology and have it be an amazing experience.
Well, that, you know, that being said, in Disneyland's Haunted Mansion, in the attic with the bride, there was originally the Hatbox Ghost. And I'll let Thor Ravencross describe him. He was a cloaked figure with an evil, grinning face. A hatbox hung from his hand. With each beat of his bride's heart, his head would disappear from his body and appear in the hatbox. And that was the ghost that was in the attic with the bride. But they could never make the illusion work. It was a Pepper Ghost thing where they would take a pin light and they'd dim out the head on his shoulders and then they'd bring up the light and the head in the box. But it just wasn't dark enough. It never worked. So they took him out. He was removed almost immediately. Even though he was in the artwork of the album, he was in the album. You saw images of him and you're like, that's a cool looking ghost. But they couldn't do him. Well, he's back. They brought him back. He's in the mansion again. He's in the attic. And, of course, it's digital projection. And it's gorgeous. His head disappears from his body and appears in the hat box. And he's looking around. He's very expressionable. But he looks slightly out of place when you get in there. Because the bride is also digital projection at this point. He's digital projection. But the majority of the other ghosts are still pop-ups. They're still animatronics. They're still the classic illusions. So it's a nice mix. I'm okay with that. Like a Maximilian's giving us the eye.
Oh, hey. Before we go, for those of you who have enjoyed these topics, want to know more about Pepper's Ghost Illusion, there's a wonderful book I'm going to recommend to you by Jim Steinmeier called Hiding the Elephant.
Mm.
And it is the history of optical illusions that were invented in the dance halls and have been co-opted by Disney and all these other amusement park people to this day. These very old, very time-honored, 100-plus-year-old effects that still actually work. Fascinating reading. Steinmeier's an amazing writer. Chatty and conversational. A lot of cool diagrams, but really interesting stuff. If you're interested in that and want to know more, and thoroughly spoil any possible joy you may get from Future Haunted House. Hiding the Elephant by Jim Steinmeier.
Nicely done. Well, we do have to wrap this up, folks. I'm afraid it is our time. Any last words about haunted houses, real or imagined, around the table? Mickey.
Boo.
I'm scared. Mark?
Hey, always remember, folks, keep an open mind, but don't immediately think that just because your hair's standing on end, it's a ghost. There's a lot of other things that explain that phenomena. So don't be duped, but enjoy the sensations when you come across it.
Aaron?
And I just want to say, as far as a movie, if you want to see a good haunted house movie on Halloween and are wondering what to watch, I still think it is almost impossible to beat the classic The Haunting, which is just an amazing film.
63.
See it, yep, 1963. See it with the lights off, the sound up, and just prepare to be completely creeped out.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid it is time. Have you enjoyed your visit? I told you would not be harmed. Thank you for spending some time with us. Come back again. Bring your friends, if they believe the story you tell. We have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. And Red Skull lives.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak and Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by EMF, your constant humming companion.
Have we decided the name for the robot?
No, I thought we were still. It was still open until the end of October, and then we would.
Okay, I thought we were announcing it on. That's why I was going to say we could announce it in this episode.
No, I haven't decided yet.
Yeah, November.
We'll let it run a little bit longer. But yeah, let's leave it open in case somebody comes up with something brilliant at the last second.
That was a clue. That was a clue. A hint. A nudge. A suggestion to our dear listeners. This is a clue. Your time is running out for the contest.
Yep.